Hello, I'm Floyd Miller, the host of It's Everything West Texas, and I mean everything. Some of our topics are going to make you laugh, and some will make you cry. I guarantee you all of them will make you think. It is the podcast that highlights people and issues in West Texas. As a neighbor, we want to talk with you. The goal is not necessarily to get agreement, but it is about understanding. Subscribe today and never miss another podcast. Come on. Hello, my name is Floyd Miller, and I am the host of It's Everything West Texas. I think we have a very interesting program today because this program centers around money to some degree. Maybe there's someone out here that has a great idea, but they need money. We have an individual today that's going to be able to talk with you about that. He spoke at the Abilene Black Chamber of Commerce banquet a few weeks ago. This individual is the district director of the Small Business Administration. His name is Calvin Davis, and we're going to be talking with him in just a minute. Today, this program is being sponsored by the West Texas Tribune, real news, local news at westtexastribune.org, and Floyd Miller Investments, helping individuals make wise money decisions. For more information, call 325-676-0138. Welcome to the program today, Calvin.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing good. We are happy to have you here. And once again, I want to thank you for being our keynote speaker at the Abilene Black Chamber of Commerce banquet. There's still quite a bit of buzz about that speech. I think it was very good. To me, it was informative. It was humorous. And it had even a couple of poignant points. So I thought it was a very good speech, and I'm glad you came.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I always enjoy going to Abilene. I think it's a great city, a great place to start and run a business. And, of course, the chambers of commerce there, the main chamber and the Black Chamber, are pretty amazing. So it's always a great thing for me to participate in those types of things, especially in Abilene.
Okay, well, you know, when we hear the word Small Business Administration, there's a lot of people thinking about starting businesses and have great ideas. So you might be someone that would come up on the radar pretty fast. Could you tell us a little bit about the Small Business Administration and really how it works?
Sure. Yes, the SBA, Small Business Administration, is a federal governmental agency. Many people say Small Business Association, but we're actually an agency of the federal government, and our mission is to help and support small businesses, and we do it through different vehicles, our capital access programs, which primarily includes our lending, our guaranteed lending program with the banks, where you know you go to a bank and effectively a bank that actually has a process of signed up with us can do an SBA loan. They'll do the loan, and we back the bank, basically making it more palatable and easier for the borrower, the small business person, to get a loan. The contracting program, we do certifications for government contracting. And that's a big program because the government spends billions and billions of dollars every year on contracting. And so much of it has to be done with small businesses. The other avenue is free counseling, and we primarily do that through our partners, the Small Business Development Centers. There's a wonderful one right there in Abilene and all over West Texas. We cover 71 counties, and so whether it's in Abilene, Amarillo, Midland, Odessa, Lubbock, or all the counties in between, we are there to serve and to help people get their business plans or financial statements or whatever they need together. And then the other big program is our disaster program. It's a whole different program, and people heard about the EIDL, Economic Injury Disaster Loans, especially during COVID, but we do it for all kinds of disaster loans, different types of loans for fires, floods, droughts, you name it. SBA is there And so we're a small agency with a huge mission, and we're helping supporting our economy. That's another thing in our mission, is like promoting the economy of our country.
Okay, I want to go back to the Small Business Development Center. I've had a little experience with them. One time someone came to me with an idea, something that they wanted me to get involved in, and they were going to put the money up for it. I said, well, I should at least check it out. And so the Small Business Development Center probably saved me a lot of headaches and probably a lot of money, because when I began to look at the numbers and what they were showing me, I said, well, I don't think I need to do this. So would you go a little deeper into what the Small Business Development Center does?
Absolutely. And just to understand that Small Business Development Center, I'll call it SBDC, they're a product of the SBA, Small Business Administration, but it's a partnership actually with the states, all the states, and with the federal government, where they're funded by both, and they're housed under a state institution typically. And in this case, Texas Tech is the umbrella for the whole area. And in Abilene, certainly there was the Texas Tech, SBDC at Texas Tech. Now, what happens is that all of our counseling is free. Training is at a nominal cost, if any. And what we do in terms of the counseling, I think where you came in, Floyd, is that the SBDC was able to look at financial statements and prepare financial statements and actually guide the customer, the clients, through the process of whatever they're going to do. If it's a business plan to start a business or to run their business better, could be cash flow issues, could be, in your case, purchasing a business. We have experts who analyze financial statements, analyze the situation, the market. We do marketing plans and market analysis. In fact, we have a great system that we just looked at today. The system where Placer system, where you actually can determine in an area, say traffic patterns. You could determine, look at what are the regional sales or the sales for that specific area, the parameters, and maybe several block area, whatever, to see is this a good place to do this type of business if it's locationally based, meaning that most businesses now, you know, you are a lot of virtual stuff happens, internet, so forth. But we can actually give information on that too. There's a lot of things that SBDC can do, many tools in their toolbox that can help you be successful.
So if someone is wanting a loan, would you say that the Small Business Development Center have a great idea? I believe they have a great idea. Would you say that maybe the Small Business Development Center might be the first stop?
I would say that the SBDC would be the first stop. That is, with your idea, in terms of an idea, it usually starts with a plan. I think the old thing is you have to plan something. Failing to plan is planning to fail. That PLAN, I think I mentioned in my speech, you know, you have to put that, I mentioned prayer, and I'll put pen to paper, that first P in it, you know, and do some analysis. That A is the analysis. And so they'll help you with that whole process of planning it out. Now, many people may already have a plan, but many times you can go to a professional who does this all the time, and they can really help tweak that plan into being something that they can possibly be successful. And many lenders, many banks will tell you, unless you have a business plan, it's kind of hard for us to help you out. That's not always the case. Many businesses have been in business a long time. So, but mainly for ones who are starting up or ones who have maybe been in business for less than a couple of years, the lender wants to look at the business plan, because the business plan not only shows the roadmap of where they're going, but also the projections will show you, are they realistic in terms of cash flow? With SBA, our lending program is based on cash flow. Can you repay the loan? We don't want to put people in a position where they cannot pay the loan back. And sometimes people don't ask for enough money to be successful.
Wow. So,
sure.
Okay, so the partnership between you, the bank, and the lender, why might somebody come to SBA versus just going straight to the bank?
Well, they can. That can certainly happen. Some people don't. We aren't a necessity. It's just that we, I think, help ensure success, because there are times sometimes we have to let people know, no, you may want to hold off. In fact, there's another group out there called SCORE. There's a chapter in Dallas, but they have people like Linda Gray who handles Abilene and Lubbock and other folks. We have a SCORE sub-chapter in Lubbock. There used to be one in Abilene. Well, what are they? SCORE stood for Service Corps of Retired Executives. They don't like to be called that because many of them are not retired, but they are mentors. They provide free advice in terms of what you need to do. When it comes down to the nuts and bolts of actually getting a business plan, SBDC will help you. But I will tell you, many banks, I think this goes more to your initial question there, many banks will tell you that you have to go to the SBDC before you come to us for most of their clients. That is the newer or the startup clients. And Floyd, I want to put out one thing. For a few years, we put out a notice that actually changed the whole thing we do with startups. For a startup, you know, we said anybody, reasonable equity, we don't have requirements, generally speaking, for starting a business. But about 2 or 3 years ago, SBA made a rule that you need to have at least 10% equity to start a business and to get an SBA loan. Well, that rule just recently went away. So it's all based on what the bank will do for you. But I want to tell you, people out there listening, that the biggest impediment for people who even have a great business plan, a great idea and everything, the biggest impediment is not having enough money to start it. Many lenders for a startup on their own, they say they need about 20, 30%. So for $100,000, they may need you to get about $20,000 to $30,000 saved up already or have purchased enough assets, because it's about, you know, what kind of skin do you have in the game? They have a loan committee. They need to make sure that this is something that's passable by the loan committee and ultimately by the regulators, because risk is a big thing that they look at in lending.
Right, right. Okay, so let's move a little bit to this government contracting. I mean, we have Dice Air Force Base here, which is, they have all kinds of contracts. So how do you prepare a person to get a government contract or to get them certified? What does that process look like?
That's a great question. So the very first thing that people want to do is to make sure they're in the SAMS system. And I would tell you what that meant. I've known about it for years, but basically SAMS system. And that's where you have to register. And to do that, we have a group that's under the SBA, SBDC umbrella, that is called APEX. They used to be called the PAC, Procurement Assistance Center, but they're called APEX group. And you can find them in the same location there where the SBDC offices are. And they will then take you through the process. There is a process, and sometimes takes a little bit of time, but they're experts in getting you through that. That's number one. Now, SBA also does certifications. We certify SDB, small disadvantaged businesses. And that's a process that we do. APEX starts it, and then of course SBA does the final review. But the Gold Star program, people call it the Mercedes-Benz program for certain businesses, is called the 8A set aside program. That's 8A of the Small Business Act. And those are contracts that you have to be in business for 2 years. You have to have a likelihood of success. And it has to be 51% owned by a person who is considered disadvantaged. Now, those rules have changed a lot. It used to be automatically you were considered disadvantaged if you fell into one of the five categories: African-American, Hispanic, Native American, Pacific Islander. But now you have to show, everyone has to show by a preponderance of the evidence, meaning some kind of evidence that you are in some way disadvantaged. That could be Anglo person, white person, doesn't matter about their ethnicity. It's just a matter of showing that how have you not been able to compete on an even basis. And so that's a program where many of those contracts, all those contracts pretty much are limited, meaning that sole sourced, meaning that, you know, they can pick a contractor directly without bidding, or it could be limited to bidding only with other 8A contractors. And once it's in the 8A program, it stays in there. So that's a Gold Star program. But the SDB program and the other women-owned business program, which we do certify women-owned businesses, those are great programs because they actually give the business an advantage because there's limited competition, and there are ways that are actually used to promote or to give those contractors an advantage because there's a requirement that the government has to do so many contracts with small businesses. 22%, in fact, is the standard of all their contracts. And I will tell you that since COVID, I mean, the numbers have gone up in terms of the dollars. We're talking about $140 billion. Typically, it's around $30 billion. But last year, before last, $140 billion was spent with small businesses. And that number this year, we expect to be about $100 billion. So we're talking a lot of money for small businesses.
Well, even going through the certification program, where might a person get, for the lack of a better word, washed out? I mean, as I think about some of these government contracts, they're probably pretty huge. I mean, do you have to have normally a certain net worth to get into one of those programs?
There's not a minimum net worth. Now, there is a limitation, meaning that we do not want people who are very, very wealthy getting those loans. Yes, there is a limitation. After you remove the equity in someone's home and their business, it's a standard. Actually, it's down to about $1 million now, net worth. Used to be a lot less. $250,000 was a standard, went to $500,000, and now the needle has moved up some. I say a million. Actually, I think it's less than $750,000. I think it is. But the point is that the bigger issue, Floyd, is that you have to show the likelihood of success, meaning that are you bondable? That's kind of the whole idea. Are you bondable? Also, do you have a proper legal status, meaning that are you truly, if you say you're in an LLC, do you have the documentation to show that? Are you a corporation? And do you have stock certificates? Now, in that situation, that's where the SBDC is very helpful because they can help you get in compliance. They're not lawyers or your accountants, even though, like myself, I'm a lawyer. They have CPAs who are involved, but they cannot be your specific lawyer or accountant. They can be the counselor. We can help with certain things in preparing you, but we can make sure that you're on the path to being in compliance to be able to qualify for these contracts. Now, I want to make a distinction. We're talking about federal contracts. We're a federal agency. However, APEX is also set up with state funding to help with state contracts because people like TxDOT, Texas Department of Transportation, they do billions of dollars for small businesses. One thing they do love are SBA certified small businesses, be it SDBs, Women Owned Business, 8A. Those are the ones that they look for. They call us all the time and say, do you have any who can do this work? And that's another great avenue, and it's a pretty quick avenue to become what is called a hub certified business. That's a state hub certified business. There's a federal hub program that's different, but the state of Texas has the historically underutilized business certification, hub certification. I understand it takes about 50 to 60 days before that thing happens, but that's with state entities, schools, let's say, schools, universities, TxDOT, Department of Energy, the State Department of Commerce, other state departments are ones that really use that hub program.
So it seems like there are some real opportunities out there for people that want to do business with the state and the federal government. But you know, you were talking about being in compliance or out of compliance. I suspect that there are some great business people, but maybe they don't know what they don't know. Maybe they don't know exactly what it takes to do business with the state or the government. And what I hear you saying is that somewhere in the Small Business Administration, there's more likely an agency that can point someone in the right direction.
Yes, and I want to encourage people to do this. Take advantage of the training that's out there, and I'm going to say primarily most areas by the Small Business Development Centers. I mentioned counseling, but training is another big area that we're involved, SBA, SBDC, meaning that we have classes, training classes on all the things I've talked about. And many times we bring in state agencies to talk about their programs. And for example, the state comptroller's office, understanding that sales tax issues, understanding the workforce commission, understanding those issues when you have employees, employment taxes, unemployment taxes, all those things, hearing it directly from the experts. And we bring folks in, we bring in lawyers, for example, who are experts in intellectual property. See, I need to get something patented or trademark or trademark, well, these other types of patents, copyrights and so forth. So just be aware that it's out there. And again, I'm going to mention SBDC. Small Business Development Centers, you can Google that. You can go to sba.gov. That's a great website. I want to repeat that, sba.gov. We have an office in Lubbock/West Texas. We handle the whole, the big country, Permian Basin, the Northern Panhandle. We have information there that can direct you to information and classes for training. And again, we have what you don't know, you just don't know. You don't know what you don't know, as you say. So we're here to try to help. And certainly the chamber, you've been a longtime member. And Floyd, congratulations for being that stalwart of economic development. I know you were president for a long time of the Black Chamber of Commerce of Abilene. And man, I tell you, they have it going on. Dee Moore and her group, they know how to get in touch with the right resources. And I'm excited that former Mayor Anthony Williams is going to be the next president. Of course, he knows what's going on, too. So in terms of big country, they know what's going on. I know people are listening from other areas. SBDC, Small Business Development Center, if you put that in there. Or I tell you, America's SBDC. That's an easy way to find it because that's kind of how they want to be known now, as America's SBDC. And those are, you can find SBDCs anywhere in the country by going to that website.
Well, you've given us a lot of information. I do want you maybe to add a couple more words about this disaster relief programs that you have and kind of how those work.
Yes, very good. So the disaster program is a program that's a direct loan program from SBA. The disaster department is called the ODRR, Office of Disaster Recovery and Relief, Resiliency and Relief. They changed their names recently. But what is that? Those are folks who work just on disasters. Think about this. I think there are like 26 active disasters going on right now in the country. And so we are there with FEMA, sometimes without FEMA, to help this, like the storms, the floods, and so forth. And so someone basically can go to our website and mostly, primarily, you can apply online. During COVID, you had to apply online, but you can apply online. You can send your application in, download it for relief. Now, what kind of relief we're talking about? If you can show that you've been affected negatively, your business has been affected negatively from, let's say it's been a drought or some other reason from a disaster, then you may qualify as long as you can show repayment ability. Let's say that a storm or something or a flood or fire has that declared a disaster, that is, destroyed your business. Or guess what? Your home. We have home disaster loans. Those can receive relief, and SBA on its own can come in and declare a disaster. We don't have to wait until the president declares a disaster or the state declares a disaster. We can come in on our own. And I've seen as few as five homes or five businesses that were just destroyed, and we've come in and declared that a disaster and provided that low interest rate loan. I didn't mention that, but these are low interest rate loans. During COVID, it was like 1.5% or so. Now, because of the interest, they're higher now because the interest rates have gone up. And we're talking maximum 30-year repayment periods. So that way you don't have to, dip into your savings necessarily. You may be able to make that happen easier. So it's a great program. It's a strong program. We actually have our disaster people who come in and do workshops. We've done several out there in the rural areas, and we will continue to do that to make sure people have the information and can get the relief that they need if they can. If they can show the repayment ability, you don't have to have the highest credit score But if you have, if it's not just totally just flat, I mean, we pretty much can go pretty low because it's a disaster. People need help to try to get back on their feet.
Right. Well, I appreciate you sharing that with us and talking with us today. And going back to business, whatever business it is, it's going to take belief. It's going to take tenacity. You're going to have to stick with it. And I would like to wrap it up, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit of that story that you told about your mother and the tenacity and her determination and where it got her. So do you think you could talk with us about that just a little bit?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Floyd. So yes, I did share this with the good people there at the banquet a couple weeks ago. And it's about my mother, who as a child growing up in Sepulpa, Oklahoma, right outside Tulsa, sit with her father, and she was the youngest of the children, and they would listen to the Ag Report. The Ag Report that was delivered by Oklahoma A&M University, which is now Oklahoma State University. And my grandfather, who worked for the railroad, but actually had a farm also during the Depression, took the family out to the farm and did well. He said, "That's a great school out there." They started in Stillwater. And he says, "One day, Negroes will be able to go to that school." And he said, "Nancy, you're going to be able to go there. You'll go there one day." And so Papa Randolph was the patriarch of the family. And since he worked for the railroad, all family members, all of his 13 siblings, their kids got to travel freely. They always came through Sepulpa, Oklahoma, and had big feasts and things. And so he was the patriarch. And so whatever Papa Randolph said, Ed Napoleon Randolph, the whole family believed. And my mother believed more than anyone. She was the biggest fan believer of Papa. And so when she was ready to go to college, she could go to school, right? That is, initially she went there and they said, "No, we don't accept Negroes." And she says, "Oh, you will." So what I didn't explain probably, she went to the only HBCU in Oklahoma undergrad and got her undergrad degree. And now it's time to get a master's. So she knew that there is no HBCU offering master's in anything that allowed Black people. So she went there to OSU and says, I demand to be admitted. I said, "We won't do it." And she says, "Well, you need to do this." They offered to give her money to go out of state to Illinois, Kansas, California to go to school. And she says, "No," with the help of the NAACP, and I'll just kind of skip to the chase, some others. She had it for backup. She went again and again. And they finally says, "Okay, we'll let you in. That's it. No more. And so they did. And so, but because this is 1949, this is before the Brown versus Board of Education case, she had to sit outside from the classroom. She could not be integrated in with the students. She had to sit outside in the hallway or in some classes in the nook. They had a nook in the back, basically closet, but she could not intermix with those, with the white students. And so they went along for the first semester, and she took as a comprehensive exam they took. And she scored the second highest in the class. And so the students start saying to themselves that, this is my mom tells the story, that Nancy's, wow, she's as smart as we are, smarter. Hey, maybe she should come inside the classroom. So they petitioned the professors to say she needs to come inside. Most of them balked at it, but one started it. And said, "Well, I could be fired. I could lose my job." So they had lookouts. They had a lookout that would look out for the administrators who would come. They could see the administration building, and when they came, they would move her back to the hallway. And this went on for a while. And other students, other classes, it happened. And so eventually, they just let her in, and nobody said anything. And she performed and became friends with a lot of those folks. And even before she passed away, 2015. And so it was just a sign of man, God working. She was a very spiritual woman, and she knew that if Papa said it and God said it, well, first off, God said it and Papa said it, then it's going to happen. And it did. And she and as she wanted to be a teacher, she was appointed as a layperson to the state nursing board. And OSU finally started recognizing her, all the students that she sent to college, and she believed that people should go where they want to go. Many went to Langston, OSU, OU, Texas, wherever they wanted to go. they could go. She says, you should go where you want to go. No one should deny you. And she helped support so many students. So many students call her mom because she was about people getting ahead. And she then was a major mover in the civil rights movement in Oklahoma. By the way, those sit-ins started in Oklahoma City, not in Greensboro. It's been shown now. And she was she was one of the youth advisors for the NAACP Youth Council that started desegregating those lunch counters in Oklahoma. They started doing it in Greensboro, Wichita, Kansas, and all over the country. And it went on for several years. And she continued in civil rights, continued in education, and in many other aspects, nursing, helping with the nursing programs and other, so many different areas. But mainly she was just a great woman of God who loved people, who loved children, and would fight to the end for children and people, other people, the elders too, working with the nursing homes and things. Her mission was to help others and to be an encouragement to all people. And I tell you, it's a great story. And you could look her name up as Nancy Randolph Davis. Nancy Randolph Davis. And OSU, it tells a lot of her story. There are three buildings actually on the campus of OSU and a statue of her. And there is a section of Interstate 35 called the Nancy Randolph Davis Corridor leading up to the exit to go to Stillwater, Oklahoma, as a memorial for her. So that's it.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to you to tell that story because I think you said your mother was born in 1926, I believe.
She was born 1926.
Yeah, 1926. And so it just shows that, and I want you to parallel that story to maybe a business that you're thinking about. Sometimes there's going to be roadblocks. Sometimes there's going to be challenges. Maybe there's going to be things sometimes that you don't think is exactly fair, but I want you to think about Miss Nancy Randolph Davis' story and just keep pushing. Calvin, it has been a pleasure talking with you today. Do you have any closing remarks?
Well, you know, I'll just say this. You know, we can get a lot of information, but with my mom, if we can weave this in, back to the plan. I think anything you do, you have to have a plan of action, whether that is starting a business or starting school or whatever you want to do. And again, I always say with the plan, you know, put pen to paper, pray, of course, start and then put the pen to paper. The L, listen, learn, lay that groundwork. A, ask questions, but more importantly, act. You know, faith without works is dead. You have to act. And then on the end, you need to nurture the plan, but never give up. When I say never give up, you may have to pivot and do something a little different, but you have to, whatever you do, you have to nurture the work and nurturing it. And then you possibly, if you believe it, you will likely be successful in whatever you go out to do or you are your pivoted plan. So don't forget to plan whatever you do, but pray about it and put pen to paper.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Calvin. Have a blessed day.
You too now. Take care. Thank you.
It's Everything West Texas is a production of KACU and is sponsored by the West Texas Tribune and Floyd Miller Investments. Securities and investment advisory services offered through FSC Securities Corporation, member FINRA SIPC. FSC is separately owned and other entities and or marketing names, products or services referenced here are independent of FSC. Floyd Miller can be reached at 3300 South 14th Street, Suite 100 in Abilene, Texas, 325-676-0138. I'm Floyd Miller, your host. Subscribe today.